Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Milo's Pro Rewards members, save big during Lowe's Pro Savings Days. Get your member volume discount plus an extra 5% off eligible orders with a quote of $2,000 or more. And buy more and save more with up to 20% off in-stock molding when you spend $250 or more. Members get more at Lowe's. Valid through 7/31. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Can't be combined with any contract or special pricing. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit the Pro Desk or Lowe's.com/terms for more details. Subject to change.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
This is continuing live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
But instead of saying McDonald's?
Yeah, so.
Not even. Yeah. McDonald's. McDonald's.
Please be seated, everybody. So let's take appearances starting with the plaintiffs.
Greg Anderson and Nick Whitney on behalf of the plaintiffs.
Ethan Shapiro, Howard Hunter, Pat Krolls, David Hughes. Joined by our corporate representative, Dr. Tepa Sanchez, for All Children's Hospital.
Several things. Let's first, I know there was a request from Mr. Altenburn for a special jury instruction regarding the violation of internal rule or policy. I've given it some thought. I'm not adverse to doing an instruction, but I think it can be wrapped into the packet as a whole, as opposed to doing it now. So I'm not going to give an instruction at this point in time, but it will be part of the total package. I have not come to a decision yet between your edit and Mr. Elegant's edit, but I know it was just one sentence. Well, I was going to say I was somewhat leading towards Mr. Elegant's change. So if you're not opposed, then let's just go with Mr. Elegant's change. Ms. Crowell, you asked for reconsideration on two issues with respect to Dr. Neuberger, and then you wanted to add a third. Let's deal with that first.
Okay, thank you.
Meaning let's do the two reconsiderations, and then we'll...
Right. I don't know if it was helpful, Judge. I sent you the run report of what's being read in and had those so that you wouldn't have to try to find the deposition. But
I brought the depositions.
Okay. So the first one is this is with the March 24/22 deposition, and starts on page 11, line 18, as far as the answer. And the question was just, what are your opinions? The specific objection is to his commentary starting on line 22, backing up. Virtually all principal diagnostic medical judgments and decisions to Sally Smith was an intentional act, which was both wanton and malicious. And that goes on to say, on line 12, who together agreed to commit an unlawful act and harm other individuals. So we're objecting to the words intentional act, which was both wanton and malicious, and we're objecting to commit an unlawful act. I understand the, you know, his comment, he's previously testified or subsequently testifies about this conspiracy thing, but those are the concerns, Judge. And then there was one other one.
Well, let's deal with this one first. Sure. Any response from the plaintiffs?
Your Honor, I have not seen it, but I do remember it. If somebody could read the line.
Here, do you want to share my paper?
Yes, please.
This is the run report from your studio. Okay. Let me see here. I emailed last night regarding this.
It seems as though she is responding to the inquiry of what her opinions are, or his opinions were at that time there, Judge, and he continues, as the court probably noted in reviewing, to explain why he holds those opinions. Further, battery and false imprisonment would seem to qualify within what Dr. Neuberger is expressing at that point.
Judge, I think that's ultimately the jury's determination as to whether or not it was wanton and malicious, or whether or not, and I don't think he's qualified to say what was unlawful.
So 90.704 states specifically that an expert may testify as to any of the ultimate issues in the case.
Okay, this is what we're going to do.
At
line 22, we're going to redact was an intentional act, which was both wanton and malicious. But we will leave in the prior phrase, virtually all principal diagnostic medical judgments and decisions to Sally Smith. We will also excise, starting at line, page 12, line 3, this is, by definition, all the way down to line 6, constitutes a conspiracy. So we'll leave in that's opinion number 1. So it will read, I intend to opine that this so-called team represented a group of individuals who together agreed to commit an unlawful act and to harm other individuals, period. That's opinion number 1. The commenting on the deposition and is not appropriate. Okay, so that takes care of your first request for reconsideration.
Yes, there's another on that.
Go to page, is it 14?
It is page 14, Judge. And it's line 22. It's in the middle of his answer, which this team cruelly, with no sympathy, with the paucity of sympathy, those were not words that were objected to, Judge, for the same reasons. Improper opinion.
Well, I think we got some grammar problems first, but leaving that aside. Well, analgesic medication, and then, and you're objecting to cruelly with no sympathy for with opacity of sympathy.
Correct.
I would agree, Judge, to which this team cruelly and with no sympathy, and then, but I think with opacity of sympathy and is non-objectionable as a description based on the punitive damages that are in the case. Obviously, we would move to keep all of it in light of the punitive damages, but if we are to, if the court is so inclined.
What does with opacity of sympathy actually mean?
Well, I don't know, given what he said earlier in the sentence, I assumed, I didn't look it up, but I assumed, given what he said earlier, that it actually meant the same thing as with no sympathy.
A lack of view of sympathy is, I believe, one of the depositions. Well, a lack of clarity or view of, off the top of my head.
Well, I'm going to strike which this team cruelly with no sympathy, but I will leave in with opacity of sympathy.
Okay,
and then what was the other one, Ms. Crowell? It was a different deposition.
Yes, Your Honor. The September 22nd, 20 deposition, this one's being read in. We didn't miss an objection regarding standard of care of Sally Smith.
Yeah, I'm on page 150.
150. Line four, starting with the word but. He answers the question, by the way, with to the contrary, because the question was, are you a CRPS expert? But then he goes on to give an opinion regarding Sally Smith, and given the fact that he's talking about child abuse pediatricians.
Okay. Anything, Mr. Anderson? Because I've been consistently excising that type of language from his opinion.
I just missed it, Judge.
As to the deviations of Sally Smith, Your Honor?
Where he's calling himself a child abuse expert, or a child, I guess it's not, an expert on child abuse pediatrics.
May I inquire, Your Honor, is that based on the record in the depositions as to his background training experience? Because he is known generally in publications.
Dr. Neuberger, and this is what I was excising from him, and I took out, I think, all of the references, because he kept talking about the dependency court and the concept of Sally Smith doing stuff for the dependency court. So I consistently have been taking that out. So I will grant Ms. Crowell's motion and remove on line four, starting at page 150, starting at line four. But I am an expert all the way through the conclusion of line seven.
Your Honor, can I have one comment?
Sure.
Which is, Sally Smith was, again, the child abuse rotation director within the hospital in her various roles. And described by some of the physicians there as the hospital's child abuse expert. So we think it's a fair comment.
Unless Sally Smith is not going to be allowed to testify in any way, shape, or form that she was a child abuse expert. Dr. Neuberger's background training experience far exceeds Dr. Sally Smith's background training and experience in this regard.
But to the extent that Dr. Sally Smith was acting to collect evidence for DCF and the dependency court, there's immunity under Chapter 39. So I'm going to stay with my ruling.
I hope that ruling does not include the period of time between the 7th and the 9th, when there it was no.
I'm only calling balls and strikes on what was actually presented to me. So,
okay. Thank you,
Josh. I honestly did not read if there was not an objection. I mean, I would have read a couple questions before so I had context, but I didn't go through and read what.
It wasn't even a response to the question, Judge. He just threw it in again.
With Dr. Neuberger, I can see how it was very difficult to keep him answering the question.
Hence our request for the court for a bit of leeway with Dr. Neuberger. I would have kept him significantly, and I'm sure the court, the defense counsel, would have kept him significantly more focused in the answers. The plaintiffs cannot help with that.
Yeah, it's okay. Well, let's just kind of move on to the next issue. Was there anything on the exhibit? We didn't need any exhibits, or have there been any further movement on the exhibit list?
I'm so sorry. Can I have 1 second to tell
sure.
what needs to come?
May we inquire from the plaintiff in terms of the order of the witnesses?
Beginning with Jessica Blackrick, the guardian ad litem this morning. And then after that, we would play Sally Smith. I don't believe, I wasn't here from the very beginning. I don't believe we have any further revisions to her deposition, the rulings that were just made. And then, so that would make sense to play her first. And then Dr. Neuberger, so we can work on these revisions.
And there was no discussion about Dr. Sally Smith's deposition.
All right, so that would be, she'd be second, Neuberger third, and then Jack, Kyle, Maya. I don't know what the order is.
I likely will call Kyle, Jack, and Maya in that order.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. So, Whitney, we did have a couple of minor edits that we floated last night.
Question marks missing here and there.
I sent them to Ms. Lawrence last night. She asked for me to send them over, and I did. It was a few minor revisions.
I know that we made a couple of revisions at 7 o'clock or so. I don't know if there were more after that.
No, it was just one.
Well, I think I sent two. There's five volumes. I think I have
one issue on one volume and one on volume three. They were all sent to Ms. Lawrence.
Well, I recall one was an objection that was raised last night that was not made to the court or something.
That was...
Not Neuberger. There was something with Sally Smith as well that...
There was... Sally Smith, I believe there was just, it wasn't a huge deal. There were a couple of passages of assertion where there was a question missing and there was context missing.
The clip got chopped early, is what it was. And there was also a couple, and I sent them to Ms. Lawrence again, a couple of situations where our light blue counters were not included in the video as well. But we're talking about a couple of things there. Hmm.
Any substantive?
I sent them to Ms. Lawrence approximately 2 hours after we received the final edited version.
Not questioning the timing. I'm just wondering how we deal with it right now.
I can re-forward you the emails to Ms. Lawrence if you'd like.
I think we can make the corrections if they are agreed upon and do it during the witness's testimony. First, Ms. Blackburn.
We'll do our best.
Anything else that you need from me, or are we ready for the jury?
Your Honor, we don't really need to discuss, but to keep in the back of the court's mind, before the Kowalskis go on, we had two demonstrative aids. One is a photo, 2528.6, of Viata as a teenager, previously been submitted. It's for the purpose of damages and... it is not cumulative as to that.
Okay. If we're not going to deal with it right now, then let's not deal with it. Looks like Ms. Lawrence is here now.
Apparently there's a couple of issues.
Oh, thank you.
David wants to put this out. It's just...
So we're good now? Or?
Yes, we're going to make the correction.
Okay. May I bring in the jury?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's bring in the jury.
Jurors entering.
Okay, everyone, please be seated. Good morning.
Morning. Good morning.
Very loud and energetic. Is that because we're getting close to Friday?
Yes.
No harm in asking, right?
Right. Well, I want to confirm while you were away, you did not discuss this case amongst yourselves. You did no investigation and received no information. Is that all correct? And while you were not with us overnight, you did not observe any sort of media stories about this case. Is that correct?
Correct.
And were you approached about this case at all?
No.
Okay. With that, Mr. Anderson, or Mr. Please. Whitney, or who?
Please call Jessica Blackridge.
She's outside.
I do.
Morning.
Morning.
Would you please state your name for the record?
Jessica Blackrick.
Have you been called here this morning to testify as the guardian ad litem for Maya Kowalski during 2016 and the very beginning of 2017?
Yes, sir.
First question is, would you please explain to the jury what a guardian ad litem is?
We are there for the best interest of the child, so in a dependency proceeding, the court can appoint a guardian ad litem where we're not for the parents or for the state. We are an independent advocate for the child's best interest. And specifically for Florida's guardian ad litem program, we're part of a three-pronged team where there's a child best interest attorney, there's the child advocate manager, which that's the role I was, and then there's also a volunteer guardian ad litem.
Is it fair to say that the guardian ad litem, your position, you're there as an advocate for the child?
Absolutely.
We'll talk about some specifics of your interactions with the Kowalskis in the hospital during this time. But before we go there, would you just briefly describe your educational background?
I have a bachelor's degree in psychology, and that's an associate's degree in liberal arts. That's right.
All right, and approximately what year did you get involved with the guardian ad litem program in Florida?
In 2016.
And how long did you work as a guardian ad litem in Florida?
I was about 6 months. I worked in the Third Circuit, which is Live Oak and Lake City, Florida. And then I transferred to Sarasota in July of 2016.
And you worked in Sarasota and that circuit for approximately 4 years?
Yes, August of 2020.
And after that, where did you move or go to work?
I moved to Waycross, Georgia, and I worked for a domestic violence agency for several years. And in May of this year, I took on the position as a program director for CASA, or Southeast Georgia CASA, which CASA is court-appointed special advocates. It's very similar to what guardian ad litem is in Florida. The only difference is we provide all the funding ourselves, but we follow the similar national curriculum that's called the National GAL CASA curriculum for everything we do.
So when you were in Florida, you served as a guardian ad litem?
Yes.
And in Georgia, did you take on a more managerial role?
Yes.
Can you explain that to the jury, please?
I'm the program director, so I actually do have some cases where I'm the CASA advocate, just because I never want to not be doing that. But for the most part, I supervise the entirety of the program, and I write grants so that we can be funded.
With all that in mind, is it fair to say that you've been involved in this type of work child advocacy, guardian ad litem work for the past 7 or 8 years?
Yes.
Let's move to your specific interactions with the hospital and Maya Kowalski, Beata Kowalski. Were there occasions on which you supervised phone calls between Beata Kowalski and Maya Kowalski?
Yes.
On how many occasions do you think you did that?
Either two or three.
Have you had an opportunity to review the court order that was in effect for that time frame?
Yes, sir.
Is it your understanding? What is your understanding about who was appointed to supervise phone calls?
Myself and the case manager.
Who was the case manager?
Charlotte Laporte.
And how long did you work with Ms. Laporte?
Well, at that point, since July of 2016, we probably had some random cases together.
Right. So, if I understood your testimony, there's two people appointed to supervise these phone calls.
Yes.
Either yourself or Ms. Laporte.
Yes.
Was there a time that you would supervise these calls simultaneously?
With
Ms. Laporte?
No.
Is it fair to say it was one or the other?
Yes, that was the point of adding me, because normally we weren't appointed to actually be supervisors of phone calls. We would just be observers, but the judge in this case did do that.
All right. Did you ever delegate your responsibilities or authority to anyone at the hospital to supervise those phone calls?
Sure. The objection is overruled.
I'll re-ask the question. Did you ever delegate your authority to supervise these phone calls to Catherine Beatty or anyone at the hospital?
No, sir.
Let's talk about the phone calls you did supervise. Can you explain the framework, the setup of how these phone calls occurred? Where were you? Where was Maya? Where was Ms. Beatty if she was involved?
Okay. I was remote in Sarasota and in my car specifically, because that was the quiet space that I could find. And I had to call in to these through the hospital. And so it was facilitated through Ms. Beatty, and she was with Maya, is my understanding.
All right. So participants on the phone calls then, again, would be yourself, Ms. Beatty, Beata Kowalski, and Maya Kowalski.
Yes.
I'd like to play for you what's in evidence. Have you had an opportunity to review some of these phone calls?
Yes, sir.
All right. We have bits and pieces in evidence. I'd like to play for you what's already been admitted as 2608 Alpha, and it's about a minute and 10 seconds.
Okay, I'm recording this phone call so everybody knows.
Okay, hi Mommy.
Hi honey, how are you, sweetie pie?
I'm great, I miss you.
I miss you so much too. I miss you so much every day. Every single day.
You don't know how happy it makes me feel to hear your voice.
Same here, I miss you so much, and
I am so happy that I'm finally able to hear your voice, too. Yeah.
I hope you.
What did you say, sweetie?
I hope I can see you soon.
I would love to see you soon. I would love to see you soon. We just have to wait for the judge to make the decision, okay? As soon as he makes the decision, then I'll be able to see you. Okay?
Yeah, we're not allowed to talk about the case, okay? Maya, honey, just we're going to talk about what you've been doing, if you need any Shopkins or things like that, if you had nice visits with your daddy, but we can't discuss the case, okay, honey?
Do you remember that call?
Yes, sir.
Oh, was that you interrupting the phone call?
No.
Was that Miss Beattie?
Yes.
Beyond that October 15th call, did you have additional phone calls? Were you supervised?
Yes.
Was Ms. Beattie present on those calls as well?
Yes.
Do you recall from the order any limitation on how frequently phone calls were to be facilitated between Beata and Maya?
Same objection, and also in terms of foundation and time.
Why don't you deal with the time issue, but otherwise overruled.
All right. Do you recall that you supervised several phone calls in mid to late November?
Yes.
All right. The court order in effect at the time, having reviewed that court order, was there any limitation placed on the frequency of the phone calls between Beata and Maya that were allowed?
No.
Was there any limitation imposed on the length of those phone calls?
No.
Did you make yourself generally available to facilitate phone calls as the supervisor under the order?
Yes, sir.
Do you recall a time that Beata had requested a phone call on Thanksgiving?
Yes, sir.
Did you make yourself available?
Yes.
Was that phone call allowed to happen?
No.
Why?
Because Ms. Beattie's schedule didn't allow for that.
So Ms. Beattie was not amenable to a phone call on Thanksgiving between Beata and Maya?
She just wasn't. It just wasn't in her schedule, from what I know.
All right. Do you recall a phone call after Thanksgiving?
Yes, sir.
Have you had an opportunity to listen to that phone call?
Yes, sir.
If that phone call is allowed to be played for this jury, do you consent to the playing of that phone call?
Yes, sir.
In that post-Thanksgiving phone call, did Beata Kowalski attempt to pray with her daughter?
Objection. Yep. Hearsay, Your Honor.
I haven't asked for it.
Overruled.
Did Ms. Kowalski attempt to pray with her daughter?
Yes, sir.
What was Ms. Beattie's reaction to Beata trying to pray with her daughter? If you could explain that to the jury, please.
Well, the phone call was, Ms. Beattie had mentioned that the phone call, it was time for the phone call to end it because she needed to go to a meeting. And Ms. Kowalski asked to pray or began praying. And then at one point it was interrupted by a lot of loud noises. And Ms. Kowalski asked what the noises were. And Ms. Beattie said that it was her office stuff. She proceeded to finish the prayer, and then the visit ended. And afterwards,
let me stop you right there.
Sorry.
You're doing great. I just wanted to clarify. When you say the visit ended, does that mean that at that point, after the prayer, which was slightly interrupted, that Maya and Beata both hung up?
Yes.
So at that point in the phone call, it was just Ms. Beattie at the hospital and yourself?
Yes, sir.
All right. Please continue.
So at the end of the call, Ms. Beattie said to me that that prayer was just the mom's way of extending the phone call. And I said, well, she has a right to pray. And then we were going to schedule, I asked her, can we schedule the next phone call? And Ms. Beatty said, no, we're not going to schedule anything right now. I'm going to end the phone calls at this point. I'm going to take care of that.
And as part of your training as a guardian ad litem, do you receive training on the right of families in these types of situations to maintain their religious practices?
Yes, sir. There's cultural competence training that includes all different aspects, including religion. And it's part of our goal as guardian ad litem to make sure that the child is having all of their normalcy needs met, and that includes any kind of religious practice.
And did you inform Catherine Beatty of this, the right to practice their religion?
Yes, it was a quick comment, but I did say, well, she has a right to pray.
And after Ms. Beatty stated to you that she was going to put an end to the phone calls, did you have any future phone calls where you were allowed to supervise Viata and Maya speaking?
No.
Your witness.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Just a few questions for you. So if I understand, I think I understand, so the jury understands the rule. The guardian ad litem program is the neutral appointed in the best interest of the child. True?
Yes, sir.
Okay. There's training that you go through. And then there was also somebody who was, I think you said, a volunteer that was assigned as well?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Do you remember who it was?
Yes, Sharon O'Leary Johnson.
Okay. And she would be someone working, is she working under you?
Yes, so I would be her supervisor.
Okay. And she reports to you, well, let me set the preface. I know you and I know what's going on, but I think for the benefit of the jury, let's sort of explain the role. So you would go to the hospital and visit when you could. Right?
Yes.
And Miss O'Leary Johnson, as the unpaid volunteer, would also go as well, right?
Yes.
And they would file their observations of what they saw in the hospital and reports.
Correct.
And you would do that as well?
Yes.
Okay. You're not hired by All Children's. You're not paid by All Children's, right?
No, sir.
And you're not paid by the Kowalski family?
Correct.
You're the true neutral?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Not to say you would do anything else, but actually you guys have to sign an oath to the court that you are going to advocate only in the best interests of Maya, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you make recommendations to the court based on what you see as well, true?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So let me ask you a little bit about, have you reviewed your notes?
No.
Okay.
One.
Got it. All right. So if you need to refresh your recollection, let me know, but do you recall that you first visited Maya at All Children's Hospital on October 14th?
Yes.
Have you reviewed that note?
That's the only note I reviewed.
Okay. If you need me to, would it be helpful to have the note in front of you to refresh your recollection?
Yes.
Okay. May I approach, Your Honor?
You may.
And I do have an extra copy for plaintiff's counsel.
Okay.
Okay. So what I'm going to hand you for the purposes of identification is going to be Defense Exhibit 3250, pages 1 through 4.
And I'm glad you have your glasses on because the type print is very small.
Yeah, I'm actually going to have to take them off for that. Just okay. First thing for me.
All right. Do you want to take a moment to read that one? Would it be helpful before I ask you questions?
Okay.
Okay. So this note is computer generated by you, correct?
Yes.
And it shows in here that the date of the visit that you made to All Children's Hospital was October 14th, 2016, right?
Yes, sir.
And it says that it was a face-to-face meeting with Maya, correct?
Yes.
And it says that the meeting was about an hour and a half. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And then you made some notes on your meeting. Right?
Correct.
Okay. In your note, where was Maya at that time?
She was, let's see. Yeah, she was in her room, her hospital room.
Okay. Did the hospital ask you to come to the hospital and explain to Maya why she was being held at the hospital?
Yes.
Okay. And just for frame of reference, on October 14th, earlier in the day, you were at the dependency court, correct?
Correct.
And you made a note that the Kowalskis did not contest shelter at that hearing, correct?
Approach both of you, please. Regard that last question is not relevant to this case at all.
Okay. You were asked by the hospital to come to visit Maya and explain to her why she's staying at the hospital. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You made some observations while you were at the hospital. Is that fair?
Yes, sir.
Let me ask you about a couple of the comments in here. May I approach on a question before I ask it, Your Honor?
Yes. Hey, members of the jury, I'm going to ask that you step into the other room for a few moments. Do not discuss this case amongst yourselves. Do not do any investigation and receive no information.
All right. Sure as that.
Okay, the jury is out of our presence. Ma'am, can I actually have you go sit out in the hall for a few moments? Okay, the witness is out of our presence, so is the jury. Mr. Anderson.
As we explained to the court above, and again for the record, by virtue of counsel having taken a DCF note, held it up.
Sorry. My apologies. I'm just moving on so you don't. Sorry, Mr. Anderson. Mm-hmm.
By holding it up, showing it around the courtroom to the jury, referencing it as what it is, and then reading out sections. Admittedly, as we watched, yeah, there's some slight paraphrases, but in essence, the language of that note was being portrayed then to the witness. And in that way, the jury is now under the impression that there are notes out there that are contradicting everything the witness says and introducing the whole idea here, the concept of who was in control at what point, which is in direct violation of this court's instruction that we are not supposed to be getting into that stuff. And the plaintiffs have been chastised, and I understand the court's position on those. But in this instance now, we have got effectively a published, or at least part of a published note in here on something the court specifically instructed us, the plaintiffs, and the defense was there, not to do. And so we asked the court to take under advisement because obviously with 5 years into this, we want to see a jury verdict here. But we asked the court to take under advisement a motion for mistrial in that regard. And we asked the court also to consider if indeed this is the way they're proceeding and at this point that the door has been opened for us to attack some of these notes and some of these positions and some of these actions that were behind the orders and DCF directions. So that is our position.
Well, let me be, are you or are you not moving for a mistrial? I need a clear you are or are not moving for mistrial.
May I inquire from the court, if I may move as previously done here to move for a mistrial, but have the court take it under advisement until the conclusion of the case, because I do not want to take a step right now that wastes 5 years of litigation and now 3.5-4 weeks.
I am not in the position to give an advisory opinion about what I might do on a motion you haven't made.
Then I cannot make it because I do not want in any way to have this trial.
So to be clear, you are not moving for mistrial.
Under these circumstances, I am not moving for mistrial. I am, however, documenting for the record that the extent of the damage done here is a basis for it. But I cannot move for a mistrial at this point based upon the circumstances of this case and a disservice to my client after all of this effort. So I just want to say that for the record.
One comment if I might. there was a representation made to the jury about the Kowalskis not contesting the shelter petition, which is damaging. There was additional representation made that that comment was made because something in this note comments on that. I've reviewed the note again. There is no commentary in this note on the failure of the Kowalskis to properly contest that shelter or consent to that shelter, however you want to phrase it.
Well, first off, is this document in evidence?
It is not, Your Honor.
Okay. Let me see this document. What, just put it, what's the number?
It's Defense Exhibit 3250-001.
And can you make that note bigger so I can read it? Mr. Shapiro, I thought the question was not, maybe we can have the court reporter ask it again or read it back, but the comment or the question that you asked, which was not, I don't believe it was answered, and then ultimately I gave an instruction for them to disregard, was something about her note indicating that the Kowalskis consented to the shelter proceedings at that court hearing.
I believe I asked, well, anyway, go ahead.
Can we have the court reporter read back the question that right before we went to sidebar that started all of this?
Yeah, give me just a minute. Scroll up there.
That's why I did.
And did you, dash, and you made a note that the Kowalskis did not contest shelter at that hearing.
Was there an answer by the witness?
Yes. At the same time as the objection.
I apologize, Your Honor. It was because her note says that she just came from the hearing. I was trying to set the table, and I thought it was because the plaintiffs opened the door to the orders, the interpretation, and the no contact that was entered. That was purpose for going through it. I will stick my questions for this witness only to their observations at the hospital going forward. It was completely unintentional to make that reference, although with the way the plaintiffs have opened the door to this throughout the trial. But all that being said, I apologize for the comment if it was made out of context, and I will stick to her observations at the hospital. If I may, since I don't want to step in any more hot water on this, the plaintiff did.
I don't understand how that question was asked based on this note.
I understand.
And given the nature of the defense, let's not talk about the dependency. Let's not talk about the dependency for years. Let's not talk about the dependency.
you misrepresent a note on a question that you know can't be asked.
My apologies, Your Honor.
There's no motion for mistrial. So,
we'd like to discuss with our appellate counsel what an appropriate curative instruction would be if we can come up with one.
And also, we are trying to document for the record the seriousness of this. But we're aware of the Second District law on the necessities here. We're in a box. We would ask the court's indulgence to give us the opportunity at some point in the very near future to discuss this with Mr. Tanner, Mr. Elegant, and determine what the best approach is. And also our clients, who are not in the courtroom at this moment, at least I don't think they are. And so, but now that the jury thinks that we're consenting to all this, I can't imagine anything more damaging.
Well, I will give you time to discuss with Mr. Elegant and your clients what we're going to do. My suggestion at this point, and maybe you need to take a couple moments, is that we just continue on. Again, to be clear, the plaintiffs have not opened the door by talking about whether there was that delegation in the specific time. I know you disagree, mm-hmm. but that's the court's ruling.
I understand.
And you have to live with the court's ruling. So you can't...
I humbly apologize, Your Honor. I believe they had opened the door by talking, but what the order said, who was responsible, who was allowed to contact who... But I apologize.
As a reminder, I mean, we've been, I know you weren't there for so many of the hearings and you mm-hmm. kind of came in to this late, but we always talked about before you do something that is possibly out there on an edge, come talk to me ahead of time. You didn't do that.
I agree. And I did it the second time. So before the witness comes in, just so I don't step in it again, there are three notes written by the guardian ad litem regarding their observations of Maya at the hospital. May I inquire of this witness what the observations of the guardian ad litem were? And then at the end of
at the hospital, sure.
Yes, and then just again, so I'm approaching this, I'm treading as gently as I can, Your Honor. At the end, there's a guardian ad litem report to the court. Can I phrase my question in terms of, well, let me ask Your Honor this. The report is titled Recommendations and Observations of the Guardian Ad Litem.
Do you want to start talking about the dependency action? Does the defense want to talk about what happened in the dependency action?
No, but that's why I'm asking you. Can I ask this witness about what the only the part about the in the report? And I'm happy to hand Your Honor a copy because again, I want to make sure I don't. And there's an extra copy for plaintiff's counsel. There's a section on...
Can we put this up? And just
yeah, sure. It's Defense Exhibit 3258-001.
3258-0001. And this is not in evidence?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. And what provision do you want me to look at?
Section 3, Observations of the Child.
Can you make that larger? This looks like an observation that was made at the hospital.
Correct, Your Honor.
I have no problem with you asking what this witness saw, what she saw of Maya at the hospital. If she doesn't remember and she needs something to refresh her recollection, certainly you can refresh her recollection with this, but it's not going to be shown to the jury.
I understand, Your Honor. That's why I brought extra paper copies.
Well, Your Honor... this is a pleading to the court. We previously had a lengthy discussion, and we have a motion pending for reconsideration of the BD email, which was not even to the court. It was an internal email with recommendations and observations, And that evidence was excluded. And so we have to object because now they're allowed to put an observation.
Mr. Winnie, you're misunderstanding what I'm saying. For purposes of refreshing someone's recollection, pretty much almost anything can be used.
Understood.
And if this, you'll call it a filing in the court file, if this filing helps refresh the witness's recollection, assuming she needs it, she might not need it.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming she needs it, then that's fine. But it doesn't, it's not being shown to the jury. It's not going to be referenced to the jury. It's just the document that she's using to refresh her recollection.
I understand.
So,
as long as they're not waving it around and keep it away until.
And Mr. Anderson, let me, that's. You were making statements that Mr. Shapiro was waving the document around. I disagree with the characterization. Mr. Shapiro was standing at the lectern asking questions presumably from the document. He was not showing the document to the jury. And frankly, given how small the type is and the distance from the lectern to the closest juror, even if he was holding it sideways, which he wasn't in the face of the jury, I don't think there's any reasonable belief that the jury would have been able to, with that much acuity, figure out what the words on that page were.
And I tend to agree with the court that unless we have falcons in the jury, they're not going to be able to spot that type. That the one thing that I was concerned about, and I agree with virtually everything the court said, except he was holding a paper up here like this at the time that this started.
Standing at the lectern.
Standing at the lectern, but holding a piece of paper and obviously looking down, looking back up, looking down, looking back up. It does not take much to discern that this was some sort of official document, official report, because that's the way it was introduced. And so it appeared, to me at least, that he was holding it, reading off of it. He did set it down then, just for the record, and I think that that implies to the jury that there is some official document out there that this witness drew up or submitted to the court or to DCF, but in some way this was something official rather than for the use I understood he was starting out for.
Well, I think we just need to move on. I will give you time to discuss with your client and appellate counsel. So by the time we're finished with lunch today, I want to know whether you're moving for a mistrial or not, if you're asking for a further curative instruction or not, and what that is. If there's going to be a curative instruction, please get Mr. Altenburn and Mr. Elegant and Altenburn together on it, and we'll address it after we come back from lunch. Okay.
I have one more comment, and it's based on the allowable questioning that's coming. You were just a moment ago told there were three notes by Jessica Blackrick.
That's not what I said.
I'm sorry if that's not what you said. Well, I would object to questioning because there's five notes in total, and four of them were authored by Sharon O'Leary Johnson, who she just testified was the volunteer guardian ad litem, not Ms. Blackrick. So if he's going to be asking questions about personal observations at the hospital of Ms. Blackrick, fine. But I don't think it'd be proper to ask Ms. Blackrick to comment on what Sharon O'Leary observed in the hospital. If they want to call her in their case to have Ms. O'Leary Johnson comment about her observations, fine. But I don't think that's appropriate for this witness.
Well, I'm assuming we're not moving these notes in.
I'm not, but Ms. O'Leary Johnson reports to Ms. Blackrick, and these reports are filed with her. I believe I should be able to ask her, were these the observations of Ms. O'Leary Johnson of Maya at the hospital as reported to you?
What is the hearsay exception that applies?
What's that? She would sign off on these as her supervisor at the end of the case.
No. So, no, you can't. If you want to get, is it Miss O'Leary Johnson? It's observations, you can call her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Then the observations of the child, then I'm going to be relatively brief with this witness, in this report are signed by her.
Her? Who is her?
Miss Blackrick. Okay. And I'm trying to tread carefully without mentioning this is the report to the court.
Did this witness lay eyes on the child on, was it the 4th of January?
It was the 14th of October, Your Honor.
I think the note that I was looking at talked about January 4th.
The report to the court, yes.
Oh.
Let's make it easy. You can ask about what this witness saw mm-hmm. when she was in the hospital. But if someone else told her what that other witness saw, you can't ask this witness about what someone else told her what they saw.
Yeah, I understand that there'd be a way to get that testimony in through her, but I'd have to move the notes into evidence, which I can't do right now. So we might just do it through O'Leary Johnson. I understand, Your Honor.
Well, the court will maybe we ask at this point, although we'll need a curative instruction or the alternative, that at least at this point that the jury be instructed to strike the question is stricken and any response should be I don't want to draw more attention to it.
Well, that was exactly what I was thinking. I already told them to disregard the question, and I said it was not relevant to this case. I already said that, and that was immediate.
Yes.
If we're going to do something else, and I'm not saying we are. I'm just saying if. I only want to do it one more time.
Sure. Got it. I agree.
I don't want to keep doing two or three instructions on something.
In retrospect, I do agree with the court on that. I don't want to emphasize it anymore.
Okay. We ready to bring the jury back in?
1 minute, Your Honor. Please.
Do you all need to take a couple minutes before to regroup?
If you don't mind.
Let's take a 5-minute break.
All right. Scores in recess. What do you want?
More live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.